You know, I really think that song is a sermon in itself. We listen to it and we love the melody, but we forget about the message. And the message is living itself out every single day in homes across America and even in the church. You are creating today in the next generation what you are. And what you do and how you relate today, I would argue, you cannot complain about later on. Because everybody is deliberate and intentional about something. You are deliberate and intentional about your work, over your marriage, over your family. Like my father, a workaholic. You are intentional and deliberate about something, because if there's one thing that is a core human trait, is humans care. Humans, all humans care. Sadly, the care is misplaced. Some only care about themselves. There's a Hebrew word in Psalm 139, verse 3. The word is the Hebrew word sakan. The word sakan is actually translated in the English word intimate. Psalm 139, verse 3 says this: He is intimately acquainted with all of my ways. If you do an English reading of that verse, it would sound like that God is somehow intimate, meaning closely acquainted with all your ways. But literally, the word sakan that we translate intimate, sakan literally means this. It literally means caring involvement. So an accurate reading of that verse is that God is caringly involved in all your ways. In the Hebrew language, makes it clearly understood that care and involvement can never be distinct. Those two words are as solid as cement is. So if you were to ask the Lord, well, Lord, why are you involved in all my ways? He would say, well, Rick, you see, I care about all your ways. And since I care about all your ways, I get involved in all your ways because the care drives it. All humans care about something. And wherever your care is, you will be involved. If I cared more about my ministry than my marriage, where would you find me more involved? In my marriage. My ministry. If I cared more about my work or my hobbies than my children, where would you find me more involved? In my work or my hobbies. You see, everybody cares about something. It just depends on where you care. And where you care most about, you will be involved in. If you care more about me, myself, and I, and you can justify it however you want. Well, I'm doing it for the family. I'm doing it for this. I'm doing it for that. That's okay. But when you care more about those things, you get involved in those things. And when you are involved in those things, you are also by choice not to get involved in those things. But to care more about this is to not be focused on that. And every road you walk has a path. And every path has consequences. So like I tell people, don't complain about what you produce today, because this theme of this week is, so what? What you sow today will manifest itself tomorrow. And I will confess to you right now, I'm angry. But it's not about this. This nation has sowed something, and I hold on one level the church complicit. I don't know if you saw the news today. I knew it was coming. Didn't know how angry I would be that it's here. The Supreme Court has struck down the defense of marriage. Marriage is no longer in this country a man and a woman. It is gone. It is the law of the land. Gay marriage is coming at us. And right behind that, polygamy. It's coming. I saw it when I was working for Governor Brownback. I knew. I've been telling, well, they're going to strike it down. They're going to strike it down. But there's always that sense of, right, that little sense of what? Hope? Uh-uh. And I was sitting back there writing my team going, defense of marriage is gone. Now, they were brilliant. They didn't rule on Proposition 8 in California. You see, the Ninth Federal Court in California, it said that the people of California who voted for a constitutional amendment that marriage was a man and woman, the ninth federal court said, you can't do that. And so that went to the Supreme Court to determine, can this court really say that? And the Supreme Court said, well, actually, it was unconstitutional for the federal court to say that that the ban was unconstitutional because it already went through a trial court and the lower trial court had said that. So the Supreme Court said, we're not going to rule on it because it was already ruled on it at this lower court level. And now, in 1 month, gay marriage will now be legal again in California and all the states in the 9th Constitutional District. All of their amendments for marriage and marriage as a man and a woman are struck down. It's coming in all 50 states. There are 33 states right now, 33 states that actually have amendments that say that marriage is a man and a woman. All 50 will collapse. All 33 will collapse. Welcome to the new America. What were we caring about? What were we caring about? A group that's maybe 1% of the population? 1% of the population just undid marriage? I mean, think about that. Where were we? 1% of the population has just undone marriage for this whole nation. That just boggles my mind. I submit to you, they cared more about fighting for that than we did fighting against it. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just telling you how I think. I've come to realize something. There's three kinds of people. There's those who make things happen. There's those who watch things happen. And those who wonder what happened. There are those that make things happen. They get out there and fight for something. And there's people on all sides fighting for what they want. They're called activists. And yes, you had Focus on the Family. The Focus on the Family is just a small voice. Where was the church? Where is the church fighting for marriage? Where is the church fighting against divorce? Where is the church fighting for the health of families? Where are the dads fighting for their marriages? Where are the dads fighting to be healthy fathers involved in their children's lives? Then those who watch things happen. Wow, look at that. 1% of the population. Man, that is awesome. Man, how'd they do that? Well, they're unified. There's unity. There's strength in unity. There's no strength in disunity. And then who wonder what happened? I think that many of us as Christians, we live more by default than by being deliberate. And the difference is being reactive versus being responsive. Many will react to this and yell and scream and cry, but I would ask, where were you before? Where were you before? Where was your voice? What were you doing? Were you making a difference in any level, anywhere? Ephesians 5:15 says this, be very careful then how you will live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Now, I'll say this. As I was writing my team about DOMA being undone and that gay marriage will now be going national in all 50 states, I was listening to the worship singing, and I wrote to them. I said, as I'm writing this to you with great sorrow and regret, my heart is filled with joy as I'm listening to God's people worship, and it reminds me that in the midst of the day's evil, this did not escape the Lord. He knew it was going to happen. He saw it coming. He's not bothered by it. As the psalmist said, the hearts of the kings are in his hands to be moved by the river, as they're moved as the rivers of the water are. He's in complete control of even all of this. And it just reminds me, in the midst of the days of being evil, thinking about the Christians who live in China. They're the most thriving church in the world. And maybe the Lord is going to teach us in the church here to to start to value what really matters most. I shared a quote with some people yesterday. It's in my office at my house. It goes like this: Christianity began in Jerusalem as a simple set of relationships. It moved to Greece, where it became a philosophy. Went to Rome, where it became an institution. Moved to Europe, where it became culture. Came to America, and has become an enterprise. We're good at selling it, marketing it. But may it be that we understand it's a simple set of relationships centered around the person of Jesus Christ, empowered by the Holy Spirit, to draw us into intimate relationship with the Father who made us and loved us. And we're to live that out in our marriage, in our families, and in the church, and then to the world around us. I wrote down some definitions of the word deliberate. Carefully weighed or considered, studied, intentional, such as a deliberate lie. Careful or slow in deciding, such as a deliberate decision. Or leisurely in steady movement or action, slow and even, unhurried, such as a deliberate step. Philippians 3, let me read this to you. Verses 10 to 14 says, as a result, I can really know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. I can learn what it means to suffer with him, sharing in his death, so that somehow I can experience the resurrection from the dead. I don't mean to say that I've already achieved these things or that I have already reached perfection. Even Paul admits that he can't be perfect, just mature. He says this, though: but I keep working toward that day, perseverance, intentionality. I keep working toward that day when I will finally be all that Christ saved for me and wants me to be. Or as U.S. Army says it, be all that what? You can be. No, dear brothers and sisters, I am still not all I should be. But I am focusing all my energies on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. I strain to reach the end of the race and receive the prize for which God, through Christ Jesus, is calling us up to heaven. And if you will allow me a little leeway here, I'd like to use this to help us understand some things about being deliberate, especially in our relationships, because really this week is about sowing something. And if we're going to sow something well, you got to be deliberate. Now, if you're going to plant a garden, you got to be pretty deliberate about it, don't you? Constant watering and fertilizing and watching it. You can't just plant a seed and hope for the best. It doesn't usually happen that way. So the first point I have here, if you're taking notes, is that deliberate Christians, intentional Christians, are decisive. They live by definite decision. Philippians 3:12. I wrote here, healthy relationships require attention and thoughtfulness. Nothing gets better by itself. That's the law of entropy. The law of entropy says that things decay. Things don't get better, they actually decay. The law of entropy says that if you take a pot of water and put it on a stove and turn the heat up, as the heat goes up, the heat goes into the water and the water boils, right? If you turn the heat down, what happens? Heat decays, right? And things go what? Cold. This is the law of entropy. Nothing gets better by itself because things decay. Look at our nation. Look at this world. All things will decay if left alone. We are all deliberate about something. Maybe you're more deliberate about your work, and you can justify it, but you understand, I'll show you here in a minute, when you're deliberate about your work or your hobbies or this or that, whatever it is, by being more deliberate about those things, you're also forgetting these things. We'll talk about that here in just a minute. It's about being able to enter into another person's world. If I wanted my dad's attention, I had to go into his world. Now, his world was bulldozers and front-end loaders, Caterpillar equipment. I was 9 years old, and he taught me to drive a front-end loader, 955, and he taught me how to drive a D9. Now, that's pretty cool. That's a lot of power in a nine-year-old kid. You know, and I remember one time I went out into the back of the yard. We had 27 acres, part of it was commercial, so it was not uncommon to hear a bulldozer cranking up. So I snuck way in the back, cranked up a D6, And I started going, no, I was 9:55, and I raised the bucket up, and I kept pushing on this pine tree, knowing nobody would think about it because there's people cranking up bulldozers all the time, right? And stuff. What I didn't account for was how loud the tree was when it snapped. And that got everybody's attention. And my dad came out, and he saw that tree. And he looked and saw me out there on it, and I'm just grinning. Until I turned and saw him, I got my butt kicked. But it was worth it. Looking back at it, that was a cool experience. But if I wanted my dad's attention, I had to go into his world. And I remember in 1994, Luella and I were going through a four-day intensive on our marriage. It was not enough thing. I took her. I wanted to learn these things. So I said, we're going. And so she went. And I'll never forget on Saturday, as we're spending a whole day in our small group with three other couples, Dr. Bruce and Joyce Walker, who is our group small group leader. He and I were in doctoral work together. He's our leader. And Luella and I are sharing our genograms. We're going through our three-generation family map. And Luella is sharing her three-generation map and going through a lot of pain and hurt as she remembers what it was like growing up in an alcoholic home and craziness and never being able to have anybody want to come to her house because she wasn't sure what was going to happen when she walked through the door. And as she's starting to cry, I reached over to put my hand on her knee to comfort her, and I heard, and I shot a look over at Bruce. I looked at him, and he looked at me with a stern face and shook his head like, don't touch her, tick me off. So I moved my hand back. And I was angry. Break came. And I heard Luella say to him, thank you for doing that. I knew what it meant. Not letting me reach out to comfort her. That even made me more mad. So I'm telling you, I was an emotional child. So I went to Bruce. I said, Bruce, I'm just curious. What'd you keep me from comforting my wife for? I'm not proud of these words. They were a knife to my heart. He was my friend, but he had to say it. You haven't earned the right to comfort her. I'm like, what? He said, you haven't earned the right to comfort her. And I swore then and there, I was going to do whatever it took to earn the right to comfort my wife. Because Bruce was right. I was so focused on me, I was neglecting her. But it also taught me this. I wasn't intentional about my children and going into their world. And so I decided when I came back from that four-day trip out there in Texas through Ferguson's ministry, I was going to become intentional. I was going to start entering into my kids' world. I'm going to tell you, this was easy. It was difficult. So my daughter, we had to farm our kids out. So my daughter, we farmed out to my mom down on Cocoa, Florida. And my stepfather works at Disney, or was working at Disney. He's retired now. He's been there, was there like 32 years. And so I knew that Madison had gone to Disney a few times. And so, you know, she's like 8 or 9 years old. So we get home and Madison's home. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to go into Madison's world. And so I go into her bedroom. Now she's like 8 or 9 years old and she's sitting at her desk and she's coloring something. Right? And so I go, hey, Madison, how you doing? Fine. Oh, how was your time with Nana? Good. Did you go to Disney? Yep. And she just colors. I said, well, did you go on any rides? Yep. So I'm thinking, okay, this ain't going really well. It was everything around me just wanted to leave. Go, okay. I tried. So I thought, no, I need to make myself stay. So I'd sit on her bed behind her. I kept asking questions. And there were times I didn't know what kind of questions to ask. I know it sounds weird, but it was. It's the way it was. But then I started noticing something. Even in the silence, sometimes she'd be drawing and she'd turn around and look to see if I was still there. And then it hit me. She doesn't trust me to stay there. And I'm telling you, it took 15 minutes. It was tough for me to sit there. Because everything, by the time he goes, whoop, I tried, leave. But she would look back, and after about 15 minutes, my daughter's spirit opened to me. And she turned her chair around, she put her crayon on, she turned it, she says, you know what we did at Disney, Daddy? I said, what? And all of a sudden, I saw what God was talking about. Her spirit opened to me, And she just opened her life to me and told me all about hanging out with Nana and Disney and this and that and going to the beach. And I went, oh my goodness, Lord. She'll open her heart to me when I go into her world. And at one point, after about 20 minutes, we're just talking and sharing and all this stuff, she says, can we wrestle? I said, sure, without the boys. Yeah, and she got her chair and jumped on me, you know, and we wrestled, and the boys came up, hey, can we do it? I said, nope, it's Madison's time. I could care less about music and guitars. I spent a lot of time in Guitar City because Jesse is my musician. All my kids are musicians, but Jesse's really my musician. Plays, sings, writes, leads worship music. But Jesse likes hanging out at Guitar City. But it's an us thing, right? It's the us thing. It's his world. It's his world, not my world. And if you think about it. Abba Father, this is not his world. But he left his world to enter into our world to reach you. He didn't expect you to come to his world. He came here into your world to reach you where you are. But you've got to want to do it, and it's got to be important to you, which leads me to my second point here, that deliberate Christians live by a determined priority. Philippians 3:13, he says, this one thing I do. There's a thinking that Christians have, or just people have in general, that priority is when one thing is more important than another. And I wrote here, in some sense, this is true. In the spiritual realm, our relationship to Abba Father is your highest priority. Yeah, I get that. But if you take that same thinking into the human realm, I think you make a mistake. And so what happens is, if in this human realm you say, well, there's a priority in life. It's God, marriage, family, work, whatever. Got it? If you make that your priority, here's the problem with that. So I just need some volunteers. Could I borrow you? All right. So you're gonna be my role is my Christian role. So if you'll come stand over here, all right? So he plays my role, because this is the most important role, right? Your role is a Christian, church attendance, all that. All right, is it Dean? Come on up here, Dean, if you don't mind. And then I have my role as a what? Husband. So now here's my role as my husband. So if you'll stand over here, because this is my second priority, right? I mean, my role as a Christian, my role as a husband, but I also have a role as a what? A father, right? It's Chad, right? So here's my role as a father. So now here's another role that I have to play. All right, I gotta be a what? I gotta be a father, right? Bill, why don't you come up and be my role as a what? An employee, right? Got a role as an employee. So here's my role as an employee. So I'm prioritizing my life. Okay, but then I've also got a role as what? A friend, maybe? All right. So why don't you come up and be my role as a friend? In this, I'm not saying I'm right, but I'm gonna tell you how my worldview is now. So here's my role as a friend, all right? And you could add other roles in there. The problem is this. When I say that one is more important than the other, then I can always justify going to church, doing things in leadership at the expense of all of that. And by the way, you all need to get used to it, because see, God says, my role as a Christian is more important than you, so I have to fulfill this role, even if that means I neglect all these other roles. Because I can justify that, because this is my most important role. After all, he died for you, didn't he? He says, serve me, seek ye first the kingdom of God. So I'm seeking that first at the expense of all of that. And I feel good about myself. It's interesting, my wife will leave me, my kids will hate me. You prioritize how this is for you. But I don't know if that's biblical thinking. I'll tell you how I live my life. I got my role as a what? Christian. My role as a what?
Husband.
My role as a what?
Yeah,
what?
Employee.
Employee?
Friend.
I have to fulfill all these roles in balance. I have to fulfill all the roles. Sometimes my role as a husband requires more attention, right? Maybe Luella's hurting or struggling. Maybe we're in conflict and we've lost our sense of us. So that requires me paying more attention here. But once this balances itself out, I also need to make sure I fulfill this role, I fulfill this role, and I fulfill this role. And if you understand that you have to fulfill all of these roles and do it in balance, you begin to realize that I'm not going to put my work over and above that and justify it. Because if I put your work, right? Mm-hmm. If I put work in front of everything else, what am I neglecting? You're neglecting all of this. Now, you'll justify it to rationalize it. But it still doesn't take away the fact and in reality that you are neglecting all of this, and they feel the effects of the neglect. Because they understand, Dad, as in my father, what you really value is your work. When my dad was dying, I was by his side. I was the only one by his side in the hospital. And he was out. You can step back, Burke. When he was dying, he was out, unconscious. But the brain doesn't quit working, does it? And though he was unconscious, when he would talk, he was selling bulldozers on the phone. And I sat there and listened to him selling bulldozers and making deals. It hit me. What my father valued most was what? Was his work. Or as I heard a preacher say once, you want to know what a person values most? Listen to what they talk about on their deathbed. And I realized, yeah, my dad loved me, but what my dad lived for was his work. Because that's how he defined himself. Because he didn't know how to define himself as a believer or as a husband or as a father or even as a friend. He just poured himself into that. And all of this suffered. There are those of you who will claim that I'm a minister and I have to serve the Lord. And by the way, sweetheart, you just need to accept that. But we've got some things going on here at the house. I know, but I have a deacon's meeting. But what about the kids? They'll learn, and they'll be grateful one day that I serve the Lord. And actually, what the kids learn, if you'll step back, what the kids learn is, well, Dad, what I understand is, not that you favor God, you favor the church over me. That's what they'll hear. Not that you serve God over me, that you favor the church over me. That you would put all of that over what's happening here? Or as Timothy said, if you can't manage your household, then what makes you think you could manage a church? I just believe to be deliberate and intentional. I may have a good friend who's struggling. Maybe he's going through a divorce, or maybe he's got cancer or something, and it requires me to step away from some of that to invest here. But this is going to go away. This is going to settle down, won't it? So I can come alongside and be a friend. He needs that. We're not meant to walk life alone, and God put us together as friends to support each other. But I can't make my friends and my hobbies more important than all of that, because they'll feel the neglect of it. So in my opinion, men, women, you've got to fulfill all these different roles in your life. The question is, will you find balance in doing it? If you prioritize one over the other, then you'll justify neglecting the others. But don't complain about what you get, because when you sow that kind of thinking, you create neglect. And that neglect creates a wound. Going back to our first day, there are needs not being met. And they will get met one way, because pain pursues pleasure. That make sense? Thank you guys very much. You see, if we're going to be deliberate, then we need to realize that we need to invest in all these parts of our lives, these roles that we have to fulfill. And I believe that if you pursue the one thing, as Paul talks about, his relationship to God the Father through Christ the Son, then God the Father will drive you into finding balance in all of those areas. Did you get that? If I make my focus intimacy with the Father, growing in his likeness, growing in his heart, and then Father says, hey, Rick, are you neglecting your role as dad? Yes, sir. Get back in there and do it. Kids are hurting. They need you. Being deliberate means you're going to get into their world. You don't ask them to come into your world. Because the message you actually send is, I don't care about you, I only care about me. And if you want my attention, then you have to come into my world to get attention. Why can't it be that we leave our world and go into their world as Abba Father did by entering our world in the person of Jesus Christ to meet you where you are? Remember, the Pharisees wouldn't even go out of their world. Yet Jesus went to Matthew's house. He went into the house of Zacchaeus. He went to where those men were. He didn't expect them to show up at the temple and find him. He even went to their world. Isn't that fascinating? And there's no indication in this text that Jesus witnessed to Zacchaeus. There's no indication that he witnessed. He showed up, spent time with Zacchaeus. Who knows what he did there? We do know the result of it. Zacchaeus goes, ah, I'm going to go give back all the money I've taken plus more. And Jesus laughs and says, salvation has come to this house. Could it be the mere presence of Jesus in that guy's life, showing him acceptance and love for who he was, in itself was the transformation? You care enough about me to notice me? Yes. I've been looking for that for all my years. But if you want it to happen, it doesn't happen on its own. You gotta make it happen. You gotta be intentional and deliberate about it. And then I wrote here the third point: deliberate Christians are not deterred by the past. Philippians 3:13, forgetting those things which are behind. Forgetting those things which are behind. Living in the past actually robs you of the present. Living in the past robs you of the present. Living in fear of tomorrow will rob you of the present. And I've come to realize something in my own personal journey. To walk in the abundant life heart, John 10:10, is really to live fully in the present. I mean, think about it. What is the abundant life? The abundant life is basically when you're living out the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, those kind of things. But when do you experience love, joy, and peace? You only experience in the present. And if you're saying, wait a minute, Rick, I had joy and peace 3 weeks ago. I'll go, great, I'm glad you did. But when you had peace 3 weeks ago, when you had it, it was in your what? It was in your present. And if you have love, joy, and peace 3 weeks from now, when you have it, it will be in your what? Present. You always have love, joy, and peace in the present. In time, in life. So how can the thief keep you from experiencing love, joy, and peace? In the present. It's real simple. To the degree that you stay angry, resentful, and bitter, issues from the past, or fearful and insecure and worry, which are things about tomorrow, you are robbed of today. You're robbed of today. And all these things that happen around you, you're missing. You're neglecting because you're so worried about the next deal, this or that. Be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about tomorrow, because today's got a what? It's enough of its own. No man looking, putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit. Why? It's like you have the car of life, right? You got the car of life, and there's your dashboard. And on the dash, I mean, there's your window, and there's life. It's coming at you. You're going towards it. But you have all these meters, and you're looking at your communication meter, your health meter, and you're focusing, right? But then right here, you have what? A rearview mirror. Do you drive your car staring in the rearview mirror? You're going to get killed, right? People live that way. They're trying to drive forward in life, but all they do is look in the rearview mirror at where it was. And when you're looking at the rearview mirror about where things are and were, what are you missing? Where you are and what's coming. Maybe the rearview mirror is only to remind you of where you've been. That's it. Genesis 1:27. And God made man in his own image. God made man in his image. There's a Hebrew root word in that word man. The Hebrew root in that word man is the word zakar, Z-A-K-A-R. Now, God made zakar in his own image. Now, what would you think the word zakar mean? God made the masculine one. God made the humans. Actually, that Hebrew word zakar is rather interesting. It means remembering. What it's saying is God made the remembering ones. Isn't that a fascinating way to think of us? We're not to not look in the past. We're only to remember where we come from. Because as long as I remember where I come from, I get a sense of who I am today and where we're headed tomorrow. Because if I see God working in the past and I remember that, then I can contingently, I can also see him working with me in the where? Out there. Do this in what? Remembrance of me. The Passover, all the feast days the Jews celebrate, were all focused on one thing, remembering. Put the stones there by the Jordan River. Why? To remember. Remembering is a powerful theme in the scripture. Why? Because it reminds us of where we've been. We can look back in the rear view, see the handiwork of God from where we've been, and in that gives me confidence and trust that he's out there tomorrow. But I don't live my life staring in that sucker. Well, but my father, my mother, what about that? And what about this? And oh, I've been a failure. Look at all those things I've done. I go, okay, so what? That was back there. I know, but tomorrow we'll talk about how you let go of the past and live fully in the present. It's called forgiveness. We're going to deal with that in detail tomorrow as we wrap up our week. What is forgiveness? Because it's the only way to let go of the past to live in the present again. Unforgiveness is like an emotional umbilical cord back to those people that wounded you. And they suck the life out of you. But really, it's you allow them to suck the life out of you. You want to live fully and deliberate, you've got to cut the cord. And that doesn't mean you ignore the past, deny the past, act as if it didn't happen. Tell people to stop it and suck it up. There's no love in that. There's no goodwill in that. It's helping them to find healing, helping them move to forgiving what happened so they can live more fully today in his love and in his mercy and his grace so they can make it better tomorrow. Doma is now in the past, at least 30 minutes. It's in the past. The effects of it are now going to play themselves out. But I don't live my life as if Doma makes every decision for my life. Am I sad? Yes. Very sad, because I'm an American. I love this country and what it has stood for. And all those men and women who died in the wars before. Over half of the pilgrims who came here, who died on their way over here, for one purpose, to live a life of freedom and faith, all their deaths become meaningless. It doesn't mean that. Because all that they died for is now being undone, slowly. There's a new day coming. A new system of government, a new morality. But I submit to you, Doma is not the problem. Doma is a symptom of a problem that's developing for the last 40 years. The church no longer affecting the culture, the breakdown of the church in our own families and marriages, putting buildings and programs and all those things is more important than the culture and people. And as we stepped out, the culture kept changing. If you don't believe me, go get the book, The Marketing of Evil. Go get the book, The Marketing of Evil, and read it. Don't take my word for it. read what this guy's got to say, how he got here today, and how all of this has been planned and strategized for at least 40 years. Could it be that this week I might be able to say, you know what? If I die today, someone else is picking up my job at work. They won't even miss a beat because I am replaceable. I am. Could it be that from this week forward, one of the gifts that Fort gives you is an opportunity to kind of reassess who you are and where you are and where your heart is and how are you doing in balancing all your roles? Now, I'm here to tell you something. I'm on the level with you. You want to know why? Because my bubble's in the middle, all right? Carpenter will get that joke. How are you doing balancing all your roles? Don't prioritize one, because that can allow you to do what? Justify neglecting the rest and feel good about it. The Father never neglects you, ever. Thing is, in his perfection, we're all equally balanced and valued, and he gives every one of us attention equally. Not true in this world, is it? So we have to find balance in all those roles, but you've got to make it an important decision. And I'm here to tell you, take some time to enter into your kid's world. Dad, if you're a workaholic, put it away. Psychology Today magazine, about a week ago, week and a half ago, phenomenal article. If you look at the brain on addictions, you know what they're finding? That texting, iPads, smartphones are triggering the same parts of the brain where addictions are being triggered. It's creating an addiction. They're studying the brain around that. And people, I mean, think about it. Wi-Fi goes down here, it's like, you go through withdrawals. My phone's not working. And you feel this agitation. It's what alcoholics feel when they can't get an alcoholic drink. Or a sex addict when they can't get the porn. Same process of the brain. That stinks because now I have to put my phone down now. But it's awareness. Hey, same things are happening. But all of it detracts you. So I'm going to tell you about something you don't know about. And this is for you married or dating. Married or dating. You want to create some intentionality in your relationship? Here's the bad side, and then I'll give you the good side. Research shows that people are no longer connecting face-to-face. It is how the brain attaches and bonds, by the way. But reality is, it's not happening anymore. People are not attaching face-to-face. Guess how they're attaching now? Through their phones. Texting. I hate texting. My kids will text me. Text me. I ain't texting you. I'm talking to you. Because that's how the brain attaches, by communication. Come to couples retreat. I'll prove it to you. But the culture isn't bonding face to face. They're trying to bond through phones. So, because that is where things are, and more couples are no longer intentional about their relationship, I'm here to give you a gift. And it's free. I'm a part of a national campaign. We're actually running it through where our organization, Live the Life, is managing the whole state of Florida campaign. It's called Date Night Florida. There have been date nights in Chicago. They just had some in Houston. They've had them in San Antonio. They've had them in Oregon. And these date night initiatives are marvelous. It's a period of time. We encourage couples to go out on one date a week for 5 weeks. And we actually get local vendors to offer buy one, get one free during that five-week period. But that's not the better thing. The better thing is this. Write down these four words. G-L-O-O. G-L-O-O. Glue. It is an app for your smartphone. Yes, it's on Android now, and it's on iPhone. It was developed by a Christian, I think he's a billionaire, who recognized if we don't do something to get couples to reconnect, we're in trouble. They're no longer intentional anymore. So he said, since the research is, this is how people are connecting, we're going to use that to our advantage. So glue is a phone portal. It is a portal. It's like Facebook for your relationship. When you download it, you plug in your name and one other phone number. Make sure it's your spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend, okay? And when they download it, Mark, you will put her phone number in. Got it? Now, within the glue portal, there are about 40 ministries who are writing all the phone apps. Live the Life is one of them. Dennis Rennie's group is one. There's a number of them. Andy Stanley's church is writing some. And here's the neat thing about these portals. They're like quizzes and games, and there's relationship tips. There's marriage surveys. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do, all right, as a couple. So what you do is you download glue, sign up, she'll sign up, or he, whatever it is, and then you just choose one. Say, you know, Rainey's got all these would you rather little questionnaire thing. There are four or five of them. You know, they're like that little game, would you rather? Well, they got that on there. They put a whole bunch of them on there. So you just start one, you know, and would you rather, and you answer it. And once you answer it, you're waiting for them to answer it. What are you actually doing? Creating what? Connection. I hate to admit it, it's through the phone, but hey, something's better than nothing. What it will do, and we're actually showing some, there's some research now that's showing it's having an effect. Example, couple in West Palm, separated 6 months, 30-year marriage, planning divorce. They heard about glue. They just downloaded it on their phones. They're living separate, by the way. So they decide, oh, heck, what can it hurt? Well, they started playing with glue. 3 months after playing with glue, he moved back home. He moved back home. 3 months after that, they renewed their wedding vows, all because of a phone portal. That's when I got sold into it. It's like, okay, I'm wrong. I'm teachable. Now, Live the Life has some fun ones in there as well, so go get some of ours. We've got one in there. I won't tell you what it is, but it's like being a secret agent for your marriage. All right? And it's got something you got to do every week, and if you don't do it, you get this wah, wah, wah video, but if you do it, you get a yeah video. All right? And so, you know, go explore glue. Create some intentionality in your relationship, all right? It's to help you begin to connect, communicate, begin to do something that's fun. It's through the phone, and that's all right. I've come to realize that, all right? I can't do it, Luella, because she refuses to have a smartphone. So I'm like, can I send somebody else up then? So, what are your thoughts about what I'm saying? Any thoughts or comments, realizations? Yes, ma'am.
Comforting the idea of living in the present, because it seemed very overwhelming. Like, oh my gosh, I have so much work to do, and who's going to help? Where's the teacher? Where, you
know, it's comforting to learn to live in the present. Yes. That you can, yeah. You have to learn to say, you know what? I can put that down. And when you start to do it, your body's going to go, like you're withdrawing from something because you're so used to worrying. But boy, that's what I love about Fort. If you really think about it, Fort comes here, and hopefully you don't bring that baggage with you. After maybe 2 or 3 days, you learn to relax and go, you know what? How much am I robbing myself out there in that world? All the busyness, and the busyness makes me forget us. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Ah.
I'm going to give you guys a little scope. Is that all right? And we'll close with this. I'm going to show you in a sculpt why your marriage has to be so important. So can I borrow you? Yeah. You can say no. You have the freedom to say no. You don't want to? That's cool. Come on up. I'm always about respect. All right. This, no, actually, I want you on this side. It's not a control issue. I don't know what it is. I guess I'm right-handed, I don't know. All right, this right here represents a bond, got it? It represents an attachment. And so when you come together with somebody, this is particularly for you families that are married, we have to have time together, don't we? But we also have to have what? Time apart. She needs to hang out with her friends. She needs to do this thing. I need time apart for my own self. So though we need to come together for maybe talking, sharing, communicating, sex, that kind of stuff, we also need part with other people, don't we? But guess what we never lose? Never lose the what? Never lose the bond. This is most important. Well, we get married and we have children, all right? So we have our son. So our son comes into our life. We're all excited because now we have a son. All right, take this hand, put it here. I'm here, and now we're going to walk through life and raise our son.
Dad.
Love you, boy. So here we are, and we're going to walk through life now, all right, as a family, right? We love each other, and we love our son. Got it? And this is what most families look like today. But do you see a problem with this? What's the problem? What's that?
His hat's in the way.
His hat's in the way? What's the problem with this? What about the bond? It isn't broken.
It's through the sun.
Say that real loud.
It's through the sun.
We are attached.
Through the sun.
Through him. Don't lose sight of this. Her and I are still connected. It just comes through our children. So when he goes, don't go too far away. When he goes off to school, there is no more attachment. This is the second highest divorce rate, right here. Matter of fact, couples married 30 years and longer, 3 times higher divorce rate than any other age group in America now. They're throwing their marriage. There's even a name for it in the community, in the culture. It's called gray divorce. Those marriages are ending at a faster rate than any other age group. It's the baby boomers. They're throwing them away like crazy now in their older age. We have lost our attachment because it came through our son. So then, since this is the most important part, right? Come back up here, son. Stand in front of us, please. Put your right hand on his shoulder. Now, this is what your family's supposed to look like. We love him. He's a great guy. We love each other. But this is the primary attachment. And we're going to raise our children. We're going to do the best we know how. Us is going to do it. And when he takes off to go to school, we're still what? Because you never lose this. Don't let work, don't let church, don't let children, anything become between this. And I submit to you, God would not let it happen because it is not his divine plan. Value this, Rick. All of that will work itself out. Don't value this and lose that. The culture and the research is clear. When this breaks down, all kinds of problems happen. Even at the economic level, that's a whole nother story. Got it? My son said to me once, "You love mommy more than me." And I said, "You're right, get used to it." And one day you'll thank me for it, that I made this the priority. Got it? Thank you, you two. That help? Let us pray. Oh, look at there. Someone said, "I'm gonna throw a rock at you, Dr. Marks." No, I says, "You rock, Dr. Marks." Whoever wrote that, thank you. I'll take the dopamine. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for my brothers and sisters. Thank you for that we can laugh together and cry together, Lord, and learn and grow. And that, Father, if there's anything that the Spirit is telling us, your word says in Romans 8 that there's therefore now no condemnation. We're not to beat ourselves up or condemn ourselves. You only show us the truth to mature us and grow us deeper into your image because you want more love and peace and grace for us. Not beating us up because it doesn't help. May we not take anything we're learning as a sense of guilt or shame, but only as encouragement to grow in love and goodwill, intimacy with you and others as we do ourselves, the great commandment. Pray, Father, for healing of those needs, families that need it, for encouragement to those who are doing it well, and that, Lord, you bless Fort in the Fort's commitment to families and relationships. I ask it in your name for your glory and really for the benefit of my brothers and sisters. Pray for the protection of my own marriage, my own family, Lord, my children. It's in Jesus' name. Amen.